using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 1st of July, year of our Lord 2021, day 474 of America Held Hostage. And I think nothing illustrates America Held Hostage more than the power grabs by the CDC. And now we've had the Supreme Court essentially let them off the hook. We're going to begin talking about that. But we're also going to talk about another legal issue. The Bar Association in India has sued a WHO quote-unquote scientist for the deaths that were caused by the disinformation campaign conducted against ivermectin. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Yes, it may be a harbinger of things to come against Fauci and many politicians and other bureaucrats. But let's begin with the CDC. And I'll begin with a letter that was sent to me by a listener who is a lawyer. And the subject was Ninth and Tenth Amendment. And he had this to say. He says, "What I remember from law school is the constitutional law professors laughing at the fact that the Supreme Court never seemed to take the Ninth and Tenth Amendment seriously." He goes on to say, "As I wrote before, without the administrative state, many good things would never happen, but the good comes with the bad, unfortunately. I don't think the administrative state takes it very Ninth and Tenth Amendment very seriously either. If they did, they would have to commit suicide." The bureaucracy, as I call it. He says, "So I agree about the CDC. He says, several federal courts have said that the CDC is wrong and the power that it grabbed on evictions. And so here we are." I got that. Let's see. That was yesterday. Perhaps he wrote that right after this decision that was handed out by the Supreme Court. And it takes four justices to listen to, certification, if you will, to a case to be heard. So I don't understand why this is happening, because you did have four justices say that they agreed with the lower court that said that the CDC did not have this authority. As a matter of fact, they've had multiple court cases ever since the CDC imposed this moratorium on evictions, either due to rent or to mortgages. I mean, that is not their authority, is it? Nobody believed that that was their authority. That's Reason Magazine pointed out, how do they have more authority than the president to do something like that? Because these bureaucracies, the power that was given to HHS under the Public Health Service Act, that is what they claim gives them the legal authority to do this. Problem is, if the Public Service Health Act gives them this authority, then that act is unconstitutional because of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. However, what that did was that delegated a lot of power to HHS. That should concern you, since Biden's pick to run HHS is Javier Becerra. If you know what he did in California in terms of the Planned Parenthood baby body parts for hire, carried on the work of Kamala Harris after she became a senator. She had started as California State Attorney General to come after the whistleblowers, not the people who were killing babies to harvest their organs. And so she became a senator. He took her place, and he continued with that prosecution. Subsequently found out that some of their customers were these Nazi bureaucracies, like the NIH and the FDA, saying, "We want the body parts fresh, not frozen." So it should concern you that now HHS is being run by that lawyer, Javier Becerra. It was run previously by Alex Azar, a big pharmaceutical executive that Trump put in place, former CEO of Eli Lilly. Put him in place just in time to run out this vaccine. But let's stay focused on the CDC's power grab here. They've had, as I said, since they imposed this, and I've talked a great deal about this, I'm surprised at how few people have thought that this was a big deal. It is a very big deal. Reason talks about it. I've talked about it, but most other places just don't seem to care that the CDC has grabbed this amount of power. We've had the back and forth between Ron DeSantis in Florida because the CDC said also, not just about moratoriums, but they said, no, you're not going to have any cruises unless everybody's fully vaccinated. Ron DeSantis said no. And so that went to a court hearing, and the judge decided with Ron DeSantis and said, this is absolutely amazing how much power the CDC has grabbed. And we've had that kind of decision in four lower courts and one appeal court. But finally, June the 2nd, you had one court, one appeal court, agree with the CDC. So, hey, this is great. We can do whatever we want to. How did they ignore four judges and an appellate court and continue to, after they've lost five times in court, how do they continue with this obviously unconstitutional power grab? Well, it was on May 5th that you had Dabney Friedrich, a federal judge in Washington, D.C., ruled that the moratorium, which applies to tenants who claim financial hardship, is not authorized by the Public Health Service Act. So the judge says, you don't have the authority to do this. And yet she granted a stay of her order. She said, well, we're not going to change anything until we have an appeal. And so then on appeal, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit declined to lift the stay. The plaintiffs, that is, landlords, real estate companies, trade associations, appealed the decision to the Supreme Court. Four justices thought that the stay should be lifted, meaning that, so I guess that's what I missed the beginning. They actually, I guess, considered this case. They didn't just, considered the case, but it did not get lifted. Why? Because the people that are identified as conservatives, meaning that they are textualists, or you could say originalists, or means that they just go by what the Constitution says and its original meaning, but really what the text says. John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh are labeled as conservative judges, but they're not. I think Brett Kavanaugh is going to be exactly like John Roberts, malleable and mostly deciding for big government. So they sided with the liberal judges who wanted the CDC to have that power. You had Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Gorsuch, and Barrett said, no, the CDC does not have that power. It needs to end. Now, the amazing thing about this is Kavanaugh says, well, yeah, they don't have that power, but I don't think we should do anything to stop them because they've said that they're going to stop this at the end of July, July 31st. The CDC has taken this power, and they have extended it now four times, two times under Trump, two times under Biden. Is there any chance that they might extend it yet again? And why would you allow this precedent to be set? That's the key thing. When the government or bureaucracy steals power, steals rights from you, you have to take them back. Otherwise, those rights become now government-granted privileges. When they keep that power, that is a very dangerous precedent. So Kavanaugh said, I think that it should be removed. He says, I agree with the district court and the applicants and the CDC, that the CDC, rather, extended its existing statutory authority by issuing a nationwide eviction. Because the CDC plans the moratorium to end in only a few weeks on July 31st, however, and because those few weeks will allow for additional and more orderly distribution of the congressionally appropriated rental assistance funds, I vote at this time to deny the application to vacate the district court's stay of order. See, they can come up with any kind of malleable justification to ignore the letter of the law. We've seen this happen with John Roberts many times. Obamacare, for example. And, they're up to it again. As Reason goes on to write, they said, did the Congress give the CDC more authority than the president? Because when you look at it, and they make the case that if you look at all the controversial things that the CDC has done, do we wear masks? Do we have social distancing? Do we limit the number of people everywhere? Do we shut down cruises unless people are vaccinated? All these different things the CDC has done. And they've been accused, as Reason points out, of being too strict, too lax, too rigid, too changeable. There's a lot of disagreement about what the CDC has done. A lot of disagreement among scientific and medical community as well. So they said, imagine how, as we're fighting over their recommendations, imagine how bitter an already rancorous debate would have been if the CDC had the power to command all of these things that it can't make up its mind about, that it has no science for. Because that's what we're talking about here with the moratorium on rent. According to the CDC, it does have that power. It just hasn't used it yet. And that's why the CDC moratorium is so important. It's not just setting a precedent for what they can do about people who are behind on their mortgages. It is setting a precedent for everything. Everything. The agency's legal defense of its nationwide eviction moratorium, which it recently extended for yet another month, implies that the CDC has boundless authority to control how Americans behave and interact with each other as long as it thinks the edicts are, quote, reasonably necessary, unquote, to prevent the interstate spread of any communicable disease. As George Mason Law professor Ilya Soman noted in September when the CDC first imposed this, the purported power is not confined to diseases that are considered to be dangerous. Even the threat posed by the seasonal flu or the common cold could theoretically justify invoking this power. Nor is the power asserted by the CDC limited to overriding rental contracts. It clearly could authorize a national mask mandate of the sort that Biden conceded was beyond his powers as president. So how does the CDC have that? Again, the CDC is technically under HHS because HHS delegated these powers to them. Where does the CDC get the vast power? It cites the Public Health Service Act, which authorizes the Secretary of Health and Human Services to issue regulations that, in his judgment, are necessary. And one of those regulations, which delegates the authority to the CDC's director. So this is how this typically operates. The president acquiesces to the bureaucracy. Well, we'll just have to wait and see what they do. Like Nancy Pelosi said, we'll have to pass Obamacare so we can see what's in it. Because until the bureaucracy decides what rules are going to apply to it, we don't really know what it's going to be. We're just going to give them a blank check to regulate you without representation, to tax you without representation. And this is the way it always happens. So they create this new act. They hand this power off to HHS. HHS delegates it to the CDC, which is a quasi-private organization that holds and patents on vaccines, gets profits from the vaccines that they sell, and is a 501c corporation. A lot of very dodgy stuff happening around all of this. Transforming its recommendations into commands, the CDC could legally require all of us to distance from members of the other households. It could even force us to, quote, clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces using a regular household cleaning spray or wipe, as they suggested before. They could make it a command. This is the power that is handed to them by this precedent. Four federal judges and a U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit Court have all said the CDC does not have the power that it claims. You have four Supreme Court justices and a fifth one saying it doesn't have that power. But the fifth one, Kavanaugh, says, well, I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm going to block this because, hey, they promised that they'll stop what they're doing in a month. Are you serious? Does he not understand, as a Supreme Court justice, the power of precedent? Yes, he does. U.S. District Judge Philip Calabrese noted back in March that the reading favored by the CDC would, quote, implicate serious constitutional concerns by authorizing action with few, if any, limits. He said it would be tantamount to creating a general federal police power. It was only on June the 2nd that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit said that the CDC's eviction moratorium falls within the plain text of the Public Health Act. So there we go. Also, a Supreme Court case that may be coming before them about gun rights. And it was an interesting article by John Stossel because he was talking about some people who were trying to get a gun permit in New York. Because, again, they've turned the Second Amendment into a privilege. So the Second Amendment does not grant you the right to carry a gun. What it says to the government is that they can't stop you. They can't even infringe around the edges on your right to defend yourself and to defend this country. And the idea that this country is based upon is that we get our rights from God, not from the Constitution, not from the Bill of Rights, but we have specific things throughout the first 10 amendments to essentially prohibit the government from coming after those God-given rights. And so that's the nature of the case that may be heard by the Supreme Court. But what is interesting about this article is John Stossel's personal example of when he tried to get a carry permit in New York. He said, first I had to read 60 pages of instructions about irrelevant things like metal knuckle knives and kung fu stars. I had to fill out a confusing 17-page form, get it notarized, and then go in person to the police headquarters. There, they fingerprinted me, demanded reasons why I should be allowed to have a gun, and charged me $430. Now, that's just to start the process. I heard nothing from them for half a year. Then they wrote me saying that my application was denied. I called to ask if I could appeal. They said I could try again if I could prove that I had a special need to carry a gun. After years of confronting crooks on TV, I actually do have a special need for self-protection, and I showed the cops the threats that I had received on my life. That was not good enough, and the New York City Permit Department turned me down again. He says, apparently my mistake was not bribing the cops, because later it was revealed that the police and the Permit Department were giving out permits for money. That's the special need. You have a special need? Give me your special need. Put it, preferably cash, put it in a sealed envelope. Scams like that thrive wherever politicians impose a lot of restrictions on people's freedoms. In parts of California, people got gun permits if they donated to the sheriff's campaign. That's how this goes. Speaking of California and guns, a California city, which just recently decided that they would require by law all retailers to record on both video and audio all firearm purchases. That city is San Diego. And San Jose. So San Jose is now going to take it up a notch after being the only city in California to require videotaping, video and audio of these gun purchases. Now they're going to take it up to requiring gun owners to carry liability insurance and pay a gun violence fee. This is kind of interesting because, you know, they don't have any liability insurance for big pharmaceutical companies, do they? I think there's a lot more people being injured with that over a period of time. But anyway, liability insurance for the gun owners, you know, not for the big pharmaceutical vaccine programs. And as far as this gun violence fee, they don't even know how much that's going to be. They haven't decided yet how much they're going to require to be paid for that. They said they will determine the fees based on completion of a gun harm study from the Pacific Institute on Research and Evaluation. There you go. We're just going to farm it out, and they're going to come up with a number. However, they have given San Jose a preliminary report, and they put a dollar figure on gun-related homicides, suicides, and other shootings at around $63 million a year. Now, how are they going to allocate that amongst the gun owners in San Jose? that could be pretty expensive. That's an annual fee, and that's just preliminary. Again, punishing people not because of anything that they've done. You might say that this is a pre-crime punishment to charge people simply because they've got a gun. They are going to have not only insurance requirements, but they're also going to have a harm fee put on them. And they said in the Washington Times, they said there is a couple of problems with them actually enforcing this law. Number one, after they figure out how much they want to ding everybody for all of this, they don't have a gun registry and they have no way to track gun owners. And so that's part of why they're doing this videotape thing. They want to be able to track people, but still, they're going to have a difficult time knowing where these people are. Speaking of crime and punishment, of course, you've seen the Bill Cosby release after the conviction for sexual assault. He was released by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The two different approaches to this, you've had some people say, well, this is a technicality, procedural issue about the Fifth Amendment, and it is important that we keep the rule of law in the Fifth Amendment, even if it means that a guilty person goes free. And I agree with that principle. In practice, however, I'm not really quite so sure that that's what's going on here with Bill Cosby. If you look at what they're saying, there was not an agreement about this that caused him to testify against himself from the reports that I've seen. This one is coming from the Baltimore Sun. And as they describe this, you had a situation where there were multiple people who had accused Cosby, I think the total is 35, of drugging them for sex over a period of time. There had been one trial that had been presented to the district attorney, and that lady had the last name of Constand, and the district attorney suggested that she take that to a civil lawsuit. Now, the argument on Cosby's side was that there was a statement there that rather than having a criminal prosecution that let him stay in trial for a civil lawsuit where he paid her $3.5 million. And yet that was not put in writing. There was nothing put in writing. And so just before the statute of limitations was about to run out, 12 years after the event, a different district attorney, and I think it was influenced by a rash, before the statute of limitations was about to run out, there was a rash of allegations from the other 36 people. And so this district attorney decided to prosecute him, especially because they had newly unsealed the evidence against him. So in that civil trial, the evidence was sealed. And so they unsealed it. You had other people saying that this had happened, and it was about to run out as a statute of limitations. So the new district attorney brought charges and got a conviction against Cosby. The court said, well, this is foregone for more than a decade. Again, it was sealed for more than a decade. And there was nothing in writing from the previous district attorney that they had a deal with him. It was essentially verbal, if it was, in fact, verbal. So the suburban Philadelphia prosecutor who originally looked into Constand's allegations, Montgomery County District Attorney Bruce Castor, considered the case to be flawed because she waited a year to come forward and stayed in contact with Cosby afterwards. So he declined to prosecute. And not necessarily because there was going to be a civil trial, but because he thought he was going to have an issue getting a conviction at that time because there weren't as many known victims, alleged victims, and because she had waited a year to come forward and because she had had contact with him afterwards. So he declined to prosecute. Instead, he encouraged Constand to sue for damages. It doesn't say what communications he had with Cosby. And yet, after this happened, you had some who spoke out. Actress Amber Tamblyn said, I'm furious to hear this news. She said, I personally know women who this man drugged and raped while unconscious. Shame on the court and on this decision. Now, He has served nearly 3 years. If the allegations are true that he raped or sexually assaulted, whatever the charges, specific charges are, about 36 women, then that means that he's gotten about a month in court, which, as I look at this, you know, we've had now two pastors in Canada given a month in jail for holding church services. So holding church services in Canada, about the same as drugging and raping women in America, if you're rich, if you're powerful, if you're famous. There's always been a different standard, hasn't there? Charges have also been filed against the Trump Organization and the chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg. So I guess the moral of the story is, because this kind of morphed over from some allegations about made by Cohen about paying off prostitutes, Trump paying off prostitutes, it's a lot cheaper and a lot less legal jeopardy if you hire prostitutes and pay them up front than to drug and rape women. So that's advice for all of you politicians out there and celebrities. The allegations now are just of unpaid taxes on benefits, not the money laundering for Russian mobsters, as Rachel Maddow and others had been pushing. And, of course, there's no charges against Trump. And we had been told this a few days ago. The Manhattan DA would not charge former President Trump, said one of his lawyers. But at the same time, you had Roger Stone saying he was absolutely certain that it was going to be an indictment. I didn't believe that either. And I tell you why I don't believe it. Because of the legal jeopardy, I never believed that they would come after Trump. They may come after everybody underneath the Trump family, everybody around the Trump family and everybody underneath them. They're not going to throw stones in that glass house because of the Hunter Biden issues, the issues with Ukraine and bribery and all these other things that could come after Biden. I think one thing that all of these presidents, including Trump, why he didn't come after Hillary Clinton, I believe, is because they're afraid. Most of these people, once they get into this position, they're already compromised. That's why they allow them to win, why they put them in that position. It's how they control them. And so they've all got skeletons in their closet. And any one of these guys could be prosecuted. As a matter of fact, you look at Hillary Clinton. I talked many times to Charles Ortel, who is specializes in looking at accounting and financial issues, and the Clinton Foundation never filed any required paperwork for taxes at all, never even filed. So they're not even a legitimate charity. So they're coming after the Trump Organization for paying employees bonuses instead of paying them a regular salary and withholding the taxes off of that. But when we look at Hillary Clinton and just the financial charges that would surround the Clinton Foundation, they look the other way. And I think the unusual thing about Trump is that they have gone right up to the line of indicting him, but not over that line. Because once they do, you're going to have this country lose any pretense that it's not a third world banana republic. Because then when you lose an election, you'll be facing criminal charges on a regular basis. And I think that's why they have not done criminal charges prior to this. They may make an exception for that for Trump. But I still don't think that's going to happen. Now, they did have the Biden campaign, emails have now revealed, pressuring Facebook to censor Donald Trump Jr. after the election. And, you know, it's when I look at this again, talking about throwing stones, you know, they may come after Roger. They may come after a lot of they may throw that stone around again. But they're not going to come after the politicians is my prediction. So was it all fake news about the rigged election? Look at what has happened in the New York City mayor's race. They ran an election. They had multiple candidates there. And the winner, Eric Adams, saw this after they did re-auditing of this. The Board of Elections counted 130 test run votes, which accounted for most of the discrepancy reported earlier after he had a large lead, and then they went back and totaled them, and the Board of Elections reported just under 800,000 votes with 96.6% of scanners reported. On Tuesday, however, the tally was 941,000 votes, nearly 20% higher. So they're finding new votes. And so Eric Adams, who is, I forget what his background was, he is, but this is identity politics is happening in New York. Everybody's got a gimmick, some group that they identify with. So he's a black man, and the number two is Catherine Garcia, Hispanic woman. And so she got a lot closer, and they said there's still 100,000 absentee ballots which need to be processed, so that could put her over the top. Does it sound familiar? Well, it did to Eric Adams. So Eric Adams said, wait a minute, this is looking dodgy. So what did the liberals in New York do? They accused him of going full Trump. We don't have honest elections, folks. That's why I said they can't even count the votes correctly. We can't even have a legitimate auditing of the votes. And, of course, this corruption is typically happening in the Democrat-run areas like New York City. So it's not a surprise that you would see this happening there again. But we need to just completely reconsider everything in the election process. And as I've said before, that goes all the way back to who is allowed to get on the ballot. We have special rules for everybody that's not a Republican or Democrat, because Republican and Democrat parties can easily control who is allowed to rise up through the ranks of those parties. It's very easy for them to control that. So they put a lot of restrictions on third party and independent candidates. And then if you jump through all those restrictions and get on the ballot, they make sure that you're not allowed to participate in the debates, because they turn the debates over to private companies. And the private companies say, well, we aren't bound by any free speech or fairness rules. We'll just put on there whoever we wish. Does that sound familiar with social media? This stuff has been going on for decades before there was social media. That's where it all begins. And then it continues on through the no voter ID, extended voting periods, mail-in votes, and then continuing the counting of votes long after the election. All of this stuff is so incredibly complex. We need to make it simple. We need to open the ballot. We need to have paper ballots. We need to have people who are interested enough in the process. Don't complain about this if you're not going to show up to watch the votes being counted. And so that's really what needs to happen. All the rest of this stuff, the focusing on Smartmatic or the focusing on Dominion, singling out one or two electronic voting machine companies, the entire voting machine, electronic voting machine thing has got to end. It's not just one or two companies. And this is not just about Trump. We're seeing this now with Democrats in New York. It's just about corruption. And we have to have a lot of eyes on this, and we have to make this a lot more simple and a lot more transparent. That's why just before the program began yesterday, a KHNC radio program, I heard on their news that Colorado was going to do a ranking, a preferential ranking. So if you have a situation like the Democrats did, where they had, was it 20 different candidates or something that were running for president at one point in time, and they had most of them in a lot of the early debates, but we're always told you can't have more than two candidates, a Republican and a Democrat, in a gubernatorial debate. Been told that many times, even though the Libertarians that I was working with at the time had gone through all kinds of hoops to get a candidate on the ballot. We had a candidate that would have wiped the floor with these two guys easily in a debate, and so they made sure he wasn't in the debate. That's how this works. But the preferential ranking, what you do is you rank all the candidates. You know, that they always say, we can't have independents and third parties because we can't have the crowded ballot. Well, they had a crowded ballot, didn't they? They had a crowded ballot in the Republican side in 2016. In 2020 election, they had a crowded ballot on the Democrat side. Wasn't a problem because that was Republicans or Democrats. But the way they propose to handle this is you go through and you rank. Yeah, this person is my first choice, that person is my second choice, and on. If your first choice doesn't make it, they take the people whose first choice was that candidate, and then they look to see who their second choice is, and they distribute those second choice votes across the remaining candidates, and they continue to do that until you wind up with somebody that crosses over the 50% mark. The problem with that, that's a good idea, but the problem with it is that it's done by algorithm, which makes it a lot less transparent. And so you could have a system like that where you could monitor it, theoretically, I guess, by paper ballots and by people watching very, very carefully and make it a very slow, very transparent process. But that's not the way they're going to do it. Instead, they're going to use that idea, which in principle is a good idea, to remove more and more transparency out of the process. And of course, as we saw this developing, the Rudy Giuliani, who is not liked, I don't think that he should have had his law license removed without some sort of without more due process. However, it is pretty clownish, the types of things that were happening as we're seeing a book account written by Michael Wolff. I don't know if that is true, but it certainly does sound like the way these people operate publicly, their public face. So since I don't know that it's true, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Instead, I want to talk quickly about YouTube censorship. We have, reported by MRCTV.org, YouTube censors a watchdog agency that was exposing Chinese human rights violations. Now, this was focused primarily on one particular, is it a province, state, a region, the Xinjiang region of China, and where they alleged that there's been significant human rights violations. They had a channel on YouTube that had 11,000 videos. It had more than 120 million views since 2017, heavily watched, thousands of which feature people speaking on camera about relatives they say have disappeared without a trace in that region of China, where UN experts and human rights groups estimate over a million people have been detained in recent years. So YouTube shut it down. Shut it down. Now, they said that they were shutting it down because it violated their guidelines, there was cyberbullying and harassment. Of who? Of the Chinese Communist government? Of the people who were making over a million people detained, many of them disappearing forever? Is that cyberbullying and harassment of the Chinese government? Well, yeah, probably. Because YouTube, like Apple, will do whatever they need to do to curry favor with the Chinese, to kowtow to them, literally. So the YouTube censors cited 12 videos. They said the problem that they had with it was that they would have people who spoke out about the abuses voluntarily going on camera. They would show their ID to prove who they were. Now, that's pretty brave. If you're in a province where a million people have been detained and several thousand have disappeared, never to be seen again. That's funny, Travis. Yeah, there's President Xi as Winnie the Pooh. Do not criticize him. Do not, Winnie the Pooh has been banned. That's how bad they are in China, because people jokingly referred to him and Obama in a picture as Winnie the Pooh and Tigger. So they started banning Winnie the Pooh. But if you're going to confront the Chinese government on something this awful, disappearing people, putting them in jail, and you're going to show your ID, you're going to do it publicly. And they do that because they said we wanted people to understand that this is true, so they can verify these people's identity, that these people are not actors. And so YouTube said, well, you can't show that. You're going to have to blur that out. And if you don't blur it out, we're going to take your channel down. They said, we're not going to take the channel down, because that is important to establish that. And this is voluntary. We're not showing somebody's, we're not doxing somebody that doesn't want to be doxed. They said, here I am, and here's my ID. So they took them down. They've now moved to Odyssey. By the way, we have a channel on Odyssey, and you'll find the link to that at thedavidknightshow.com. Odyssey allows you to keep your work there on a blockchain so that it can't be shut down. And so I probably should feature that a little bit more than I have in terms of when I link to things on social media. I don't do it out of Odyssey and Rumble as much as I've been doing the other channels, so I might do that a little bit more. But yeah, they're moved all of their videos over to Odyssey. So that should help the Odyssey channel to get a little bit more traction. Interestingly enough, Trump has joined Rumble. Speaking of people moving to different platforms, you know, Rumble is another video platform. And we are on Rumble as well. When he joined Rumble, Rumble immediately changed the terms of service to ban anything that they consider to be anti-Semitic and hateful speech. And in the past, Andrew Torba of Gab said that he was notified that Trump did not move his stuff to Gab because Jared Kushner said he wanted Gab to put rules out that they would censor anybody that criticized Israel. Does that sound familiar? Do we see that over and over again? We see that with Greg Abbott. We've seen it with Ron DeSantis. I'm sorry, but you should be able to criticize the Chinese government. You should be able to criticize the Israeli government in America with the First Amendment. You should be able to criticize the American government. You should be able to criticize pharmaceutical industry, the CDC, the WHO, Fauci. None of this is off the table if we have free speech. And that's my problem. Trump does not stand for free speech. DeSantis does not. Abbott does not. If you're going to carve out an exception for a particular country, understand these people are controlled. They're controlled by the CIA. They're controlled by Mossad. You know, when I talk frequently about the CIA, I oppose what they do. I oppose their very existence. And yet, as an American, I can go into a lot of different countries, and because of the things that the CIA has done, I could get killed because people hate America so much because of the CIA. You know, a lot of people hate Israel because of Mossad. We have to understand who the villains are and make that distinction. We should never be restricted from criticizing a government or a government agency or government actions. And part of what the CIA and Mossad would like to do is they would like to deflect criticism away from them and towards America in general or Israel in general. Or Israelis, or Jews. So as soon as Trump went to Rumble, they put out the rules that you cannot criticize Israel. Canada is seeking to silence Canadian journalists, both at home and abroad, with a new censorship bill. This is an op-ed piece written by Eva Bartlett, a Canadian independent journalist and activist. And she says, as a Canadian journalist, I could be subject to a censorship bill, which, if passed in the Senate, means the government in Canada can effectively shadow ban and censor my voice into oblivion, along with other dissenting voices. See, that's how this all rolls out. First, they begin at the shadow banning and censorship into oblivion by using social media. But they're doing it to kowtow to the governments, to kowtow to China or to Israel or to the U.S. government or to the Canadian government. But then you get to the point where, and we're seeing this over and over again in Canada, they have a Charter of Rights, but you know, just as we put in our First Amendment, we put the free exercise of religion, free speech, and a free press, they don't have that specifically protected, and there are exceptions that they put in there in their charter. The Canadian Charter. And so we're seeing them locking up pastors, shutting down the free exercise of religion, saying, no, our agenda, our pandemic trumps that. And so now they're saying the same thing about other issues. As they point out, it really appears the back door to be able to control the free flow of information online and to begin to silence voices that can't go against the status quo, says Dan Dix, another Canadian journalist. It's not looking good for individual content creators, anybody who has any kind of a voice or a significant audience where they have the ability to affect the minds of the masses, to reach millions of people. They're going to be the ones who are on the chopping block moving forward. See, this is how this works. When you carve out exceptions and you say you can't criticize a particular drug, you can't criticize a particular government, as soon as they carve out an exception for whatever reason, well, I think somebody get their feelings hurt if you say that. As soon as they carve that out, you've lost free speech. Free speech has no exceptions. It doesn't matter if somebody is hurt. If it's not criminal, if it's not a if it is a violent threat or if it is criminal, you leave that there, you call the police, and they bring charges. Censorship is never, ever, for any reason, warranted. Never. Let me give you an example of this. This is in Canada, and this is a local dial-in show, and you had a public health official there talking about how, you know, we got the Delta variant coming, so we're going to have to maybe ramp things up yet again. And so one caller asked them about the meeting, about meetings and why people can't meet. And he says, well, you know, it's the disease, but he was more concerned, listen to this, I'll play you the clip, more concerned about people getting together and sharing disinformation than anything else. They don't want you talking to each other. And now they're even openly admitting that in Canada.
Banning public gatherings and whether there really is a need for such a far-reaching one given the trajectory we're on now.
So, I mean, I think it's still there. We still have, bringing large numbers of people together it can present some risk. We'll continue to look at that.
There you go. Yeah, we'll continue to look at that. Bringing people together is presents some large risk. And he goes a little bit further, and he has something to say about the disinformation. Here's the second part of this.
But I think the other purpose of the injunction is to prevent groups that are spreading deliberately spreading false information that can actually create risk. The information itself, if listened to, creates risk to the public as well. So, and that certainly is a need to manage that misinformation campaign as well.
Okay, so you understand that he says if you're deliberately spreading misinformation. In other words, if you do not agree with the public health officials, you're like some kind of a foreign spy or something, and you need to be shut down, right? You're the enemy within. And we go back to the censorship law that they're now pushing through. I mean, they're arresting pastors everywhere, left and right. They want to put in censorship and shut down, especially the independent press, because they know the other people will kowtow to them. Law and Liberty, a site that has an article, says, quote, Canada is also expected to follow the template of Germany's NetzDG law, which mandates that platforms take down posts that are determined to constitute hate speech. It requires no actual demonstrated discrimination or any potential harm and is thus mostly subjective. Nevertheless, if by their subjective determination it is hateful or harmful or false, it must be taken down within 24 hours or they will face a heavy fine. This obviously will incentivize platforms to remove content liberally in order to avoid a fine. And that is exactly what they're planning on doing. We'll be right back. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, and before we get back into this, I just want to thank a few people who have written, who have supported us in various ways. Thank you, Tom and Nancy. You've been very faithful friends in your support from the very first day. Thank you so much for that. And as we're talking about censorship, I just had John send this to me. And he asked me if I knew about podcasting 2.0. He said, have you heard about podcasting 2.0? Listeners can stream Bitcoin to broadcasters per minute listened, and it also makes podcasts uncancelable. If the banks shut you down completely, your listeners can still support you with money that cannot be intercepted or seized. And that's true. One of the reasons I haven't gotten into it yet is I have to figure out how this thing works. And also because we really don't have that many people who send us money via Bitcoin. And so I'm not really sure how that would fit with my audience demographics. But Mark Hall was kind enough back in December, right after I was fired, to bring me together. He knew Adam Curry, who set up Podcasting 2.0. And he was very kind to get all three of us together for a dinner to talk about that very thing. And so it's a great design, and it's something that I can add. I don't have to do that exclusively. That was my first misunderstanding about it. But again, I need to figure out how to do this, and I still have some more questions about it. And also, again, about whether or not people would actually be using the cryptocurrency. This is from Dave, who writes and says, I'm writing to you from behind enemy lines in Southern California. As Roger Waters used to say, every small candle lights a corner of the dark. Thank you for what you do. I hope this small donation helps in some way. Freedom and liberty above all else. Yes, thank you, Dave. It does. All of the donations are very valuable to us. I want to talk about America held hostage on this day, 474. I mentioned this briefly earlier in the week, that according to the Gallup poll, most Americans think that the pandemic is over. Even the Americans who believe that there was a pandemic in the first place. I thought it was over before it began. I could see this whole thing coming from a mile away, but of course I've been covering all these usual suspects. I knew their MO a long time ago. I knew that these were all recycled lies, quite frankly. These are not new lies. It was new only in the extent to which they were able to control public opinion because of the censorship. Again, if we don't defend free speech, we're done. Look at how they've been able to gaslight and lie to people with this propaganda over the last year. The propaganda is the center of this thing. And the lockdown and the actions that they did, that was the real virus. I said before this started, the real virus is what is being done in China that was designed and implemented there as a beta test, but it was designed in the U.S. by the intelligence community. And that's what they were bringing in after showing that to everybody. But getting back to this, although a record high, 89% of Americans now say the coronavirus situation is improving, most are not yet ready to declare that it is over. More than twice as many think the pandemic is not yet over, 71%, than think that it is over, 29%. However, for the majority of Republicans, 57% of them, they do say that it is over. Only 4% of Democrats think that it's over. And that's why they're clinging to their Faucis. Do not want to take them off. As a matter of fact, though, they think, even though they don't think the pandemic is over, the vast majority of people think that it's time to get back to normal. And I think this is the more important result of this Gallup poll. And they've been taking the poll since April of last year. In April of last year, you had 91% of the people who said, we have to stay home as much as possible and avoid contacting anybody. So that's the Fauci mentality. And so you had 91% of the people said that. Only 9% of the people said, well, I think we're just going to lead our normal lives. Now, so it's 91-9 in April of 2020. Now, that's gradually been coming down, and it crossed it was at the break-even point in May. It was equally divided between people who thought, well, you know, we still got this pandemic, and so we need to stay home to do this. Other people said, no, let's just live our normal life. That's the best way to handle this. And it was the best way to handle it from the very beginning, even if it had been a pandemic. The bell-shaped curve, as one of the epidemiologists said in Sweden, he said, why would you want to flatten the curve and extend this longer? It makes no sense. So you're going to have the same area under the curve. You're talking about vulnerable people. So why would you want to flatten this thing and extend it out? It's just going to cause much more secondary and tertiary damage, economic issues, social issues, psychological issues, all these things, by extending it out. So it was equally divided May of this year. And now you have 65% of the people say, let's just get back to normal. And you got 35% of the people who say, no, we got to still stay home. And we look at how that is broken down again. It's largely along party lines. The Democrats want to stay home. Speaking of what Canada is doing in terms of coming after the pastors, you had, reported earlier this week, Pastor Tim Stevens, who was arrested and for the second time in front of his children. And I had that picture of the first arrest posted at the top of my feeds, social media feeds, for quite some time. They arrested him a second time, again, with an overwhelming show of force for somebody that was accused of inciting church. Inciting church. Yeah, tell me that this is not the year that the world turned into China. That was the title of a video that I put up on YouTube, and they pulled my channel down for that. So, yeah, it happened. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, and I've interviewed one of the lawyers with them defending these pastors, they insist that his arrest was unlawful, that he's being illegally detained. They had tried to get him released on Monday, but the judge said, no, you're going to stay there until trial, which will be July the 12th, and that will mean that just like Pastor James Coates, he will stay in jail for a month waiting for trial, before he even has his trial. And so Pastor James Coates was at a rally that had hundreds of people gather in front of the Calgary jail there to support Tim Stevens while he is in jail. Pastor James Coates spoke, led a prayer. Other people were there, including Pastor Tim's brother, the president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. And it was reported by Rebel News, so you can see the video if you go to Rebel News. But here's where we are in America on day 474 of America Held Hostage. You remember when this happened? It was that fateful Friday the 13th in March. You had Fauci present President Trump with a totally bogus simulation from the Imperial College of London. But hey, that's very impressive sounding, isn't it? Problem is, they didn't have a curve in their model. They had a straight line where everybody was going to continue to infect 2.5 people forever. And not only that, but as the University of Edinburgh pointed out, their computer programming implementation was so flawed that you couldn't get the same answer twice with the same input. But that was the simulation that said 2.2 million people were going to die. He got Trump to lock everything down based on that. And Trump was still selling that lie. In the fall, just before the election, he said, wait, you're blaming me for the pandemic? I saved 2 million people because they said 2.2 million people were going to die. Now they're saying 200,000 died. See, I saved 2 million lives. Yeah, he was selling those lies. Now this is what Fauci said yesterday.
If you are not vaccinated, you are at considerable risk. When you have such a low level of vaccination superimposed upon a variant that has a high degree of efficiency of spread, what you are going to see among under-vaccinated regions, be they states, cities, or counties, you're going to see these individual types of blips. It's almost like it's going to be two Americas.
We've been saying this from the very beginning, haven't we? Going to have two Americas. You're going to have the people who do what the Fauci says. They wear the Fauci. They obey the Fauci. And then you're going to have the other people who can't go anywhere or do anything. As Biden says, you take the vaccine, or you're going to wear a mask until you do. You want to move around, you want to have a life, you want to go to school, go to work, travel, take the vaccine, or wear the mask, or whatever the Fauci says. Yeah, it's going to be like this, two Americas. It's called apartheid, segregation. It's called criminal. The main symptoms of COVID-19 appear to have changed, said one expert in the New York Post. He said, now we have headaches and sore throats are more common than fevers and coughs. Allergy sufferers in the UK, mere reported allergy sufferers, can experience some of the same symptoms as those with COVID, which can cause huge levels of anxiety, not knowing whether you just have an allergy or a cold, because you can't tell the difference. So what difference does it make? If there is no difference between the Delta variant, right? We got the Delta variant here. If the Delta variant is no different from hay fever, who cares? Who cares? Now, this is the key thing, and this is what I use as a title for the program today. Because, and I even said something to the effect, you better pay attention, Fauci, Trump, Biden, all of you bureaucrats and health officials and you feckless politicians, puppets of these people, you better pay attention to this lawsuit. This is exactly what needs to happen worldwide. We have the Indian Bar Association has sued a WHO scientist for the murder of Indian citizens. Why? Misleading them about ivermectin. How long have I been saying what this pandemic is really about? Is financially incentivized medical malpractice, letting people die when there are safe, effective, and cheap treatments for this, that this is not a serious disease. It is not a pandemic, except a pandemic of medical malpractice. As Vaccine Impact puts it, since mass murderers like Fauci in the U.S. continue to commit crimes against humanity, causing many deaths with no justice expected from a corrupt judiciary, perhaps India can take the lead and start to prosecute murderers responsible for the censorship of life-saving treatments. So the Indian Bar Association has sued WHO chief scientist Dr. Soumya Swaminathan, I think is how you pronounce her name, on May the 25th, accusing her in a 71-point brief of causing the deaths of Indian citizens by misleading them about ivermectin. So it'd be one thing if these people had an opinion about ivermectin, and they could say, well, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's safe or whatever. We're not allowed to have that opinion. We're not allowed to have the counter opinion. We're not allowed to talk about how effective it's been for people, whether it's ivermectin or HCQ. We're not allowed to talk about any other treatments that would compete against their vaccines, and we're not allowed to criticize their vaccines. And this is why they're criminally liable. You could have a scientific debate, and people can make their cases for remdesivir, or for the COVID vaccines, or for the Fauci's on your face, but we're not allowed to say the opposite of that. And this is why these politicians and these bureaucrats have criminal liability. They have blood on their hands. And I've said that many times about Trump. And it's funny. People don't have a problem when I say that about Biden or Fauci, but they have a big problem when I say it about Trump. Trump put him on the podium. Trump did nothing to stop him. Trump enabled him. Trump played the Joker to Fauci's straight man. Talking at the same time about HCQ, also talking about, well, we could inject bleach or light into your veins as well. Trump did as much discredit HCQ as Fauci did. I hope you realize that. I think he did it deliberately because he never put anybody on the podium to talk about how effective their HCQ treatment or their ivermectin treatment was. So how's this shaking out in India? Lead attorney for the Indian Bar Association threatened criminal prosecution against Dr. Swaminathan, we'll say, for each death caused by her acts of commission and omission. Again, this is not just saying they gave us bad advice. This is saying they gave us bad advice and shut down all debate. They offered one solution, which is no solution. And they shut down what would really work. And they did it for money. They did it for power. And that's true everywhere in the world. So I'm glad they're doing this in India. Specific charges include the running of a disinformation campaign against ivermectin, issuing statements in social and mainstream media to wrongfully influence the public against the use of ivermectin despite the existence of large amounts of clinical data showing its profound effectiveness in both prevention and treatment of COVID-19. In particular, the Indian Bar brief referenced the peer-reviewed publications and evidence compiled by the 10-member Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance Group and the 65-member British Ivermectin Recommendation Development Panel, headed by WHO consultant and meta-analysis expert Dr. Tess Lowry. The brief cited U.S. Attorney Ralph Lorigo's hospital case that I mentioned earlier this week in New York, where court orders were required for a dying COVID patient to receive the ivermectin. They would not even give it to her. The doctor, they had to get a doctor and a lawyer, and once they won in court, they still wouldn't give it to her. The doctor had to walk it over. And this is a lady who was in her 80s, and because of medical malpractice, she had gotten consistently worse. They had her on an invasive ventilator. She was about dead, unconscious. They gave her ivermectin, and within, I forget now, it was 24, 48 hours, she was up and walking around. And out of the hospital in a couple of days. It was, as many people have said, miraculous, if you consider what it does versus the leaching. It's equivalent to what they did to George Washington, giving him mercury and leaching him, bleeding him. That's the kind of treatment that has been incentivized by Trump's medical bonuses for this. In multiple instances of such comatose patients, following the court ordering of ivermectin, the patients recovered. In addition, the Indian Bar Association cited previous articles published in the Desert Review. The advocate, Ojha, accused the WHO and this doctor, Swaminathan, of having misled and misguided the Indian people throughout the pandemic, from mask wearing to exonerating China as to the virus's origins. Quote, "The world is gradually waking up to your absurd, arbitrary, fallacious approach in presenting concocted facts as scientific approach. While the WHO flaunts itself as a know-it-all, it is akin to the vain emperor in new clothes, while the entire world has now realized by now that the emperor has no clothes at all." The Indian Bar Association posted an update on their website June the 5th, noting that the doctor had deleted her now infamous tweet. They said, however, by deleting the tweet, it will not save her and her associates from the criminal prosecution, which will be launched by citizens with active support from the Indian Bar Association. They said, and as a matter of fact, by deleting the tweet attacking ivermectin, which caused ivermectin to be removed in one particular Indian state, and as a result, the deaths there in Tamil Nadu, the deaths increased by tenfold because of her attacks on ivermectin. So she's now removed that, but they said by deleting that tweet, you have proven your mala fide intentions, your bad intentions. In contrast, in several other Indian states, Delhi, Uttar Pradesh, Uttarakhand, and Goa, cases dropped 98%, 97%, 94%, and 80% respectively when they started using ivermectin. Think about that. An 86 to 98% drop, most of them nearly 100%, 98, 97, 94%. So they have exploding cases, they put ivermectin in, and I've shown you the charts done by a French epidemiologist. Country after country, region after region, doesn't matter. Europe, Middle East, Africa, Latin America. You look at places where they were using ivermectin, they didn't have a problem at all. Or they would start to trend up and they would start using ivermectin. It went down to zero. Stayed there until they started vaccinating people and then it just shot through the roof. Mongolia was the best example of that. But because it went from zero, absolute zero, to straight up, like a spike, an impulse. But you could see that in every one of the countries, it was nearly that bad. It would go up exponentially. It'd be down to, you know, not necessarily zero, but just a couple of percent. It would start to rise. It'd start ivermectin. It would go back down to zero. Then they start the vaccine, and it shoots straight up. I showed you all those charts a few weeks ago. No question about it. The entire world witnessed the effectiveness of ivermectin against India's deadly second surge. The locations that adopted it saw their outbreaks quickly extinguished, in stark contrast to the ones who, as this WHO doctor started on the campaign, just like Fauci, only one of the states removed ivermectin, and their deaths increased by tenfold. The other ones, they just disappeared. So I hope they get her in jail, and I hope we can do the same thing, but I don't have, again, when we look at the open criminal operations of presidents, look at Biden, or you look at what Trump is doing, or Clinton, or Obama. How did Obama become so incredibly wealthy when all he was is a community organizer and then a politician? He made all of his money as a politician. How did he become a multi-millionaire in politics when those salaries don't pay that kind of money? There's a lot of money under the table, isn't there? It's just open corruption in America. We become a banana republic, and we don't put anybody on trial, and that includes these bureaucrats like Fauci who have done this sort of thing. That's how he knows he can get away with this. It's not just the pharmaceutical companies that have legal immunity. It's the bureaucracy, the deep state, the politicians. YouTube is now censoring popular podcasts for mentioning ivermectin. So YouTube's got blood on their hands as well. And this is Bert Weinstein's Dark Horse podcast. I was surprised when I saw that. It was actually popped up by YouTube when I was looking for some music. They actually recommended that to me because when I look for music, they will always put out some propaganda from influencers interviewing Fauci, something of that nonsense. And so I was surprised when they recommended this to me. I looked at it. It's like, this one's got 1 million. This has got 2 million. They're talking about the vaccines. They're talking about the pandemic. And I thought, what is up with this situation? Why are they allowed to talk about this stuff and I'm not? Well, they're coming after them now. And so Bert Weinstein, YouTube has blocked them from generating ad revenue. So they're not blocking the information yet, but they have done that for a couple of videos. They've taken them down after they got millions of views. And I mentioned this last week. I said, it just goes to show that if you had free access to this, as they're getting highly influential, it's credible the way that they're discussing this. They have credible scientists on. This is a serious discussion. This is not clownish stuff where you're calling people names and, you know, saying, I'm going to beat your butt in the parking lot. It's not that kind of nonsense like InfoWars. This is serious science debate with people. And when you have something like that, you can get millions of people if it's not censored. And you can really change things. And we would have never had this pandemic if we would have had a serious debate without censorship. But it's the censorship that made this happen. So now they're censoring them about ivermectin. And so they've taken down some podcasts. They blocked the ad revenue. And YouTube has said that it will not allow any channel to discuss, quote, any claims that ivermectin is effective for treatment or prevention of COVID. YouTube is literally killing people. YouTube is murdering people, deliberately murdering people for money, for political power, for access. They're doing it to please the political class. And the political class in every country of this world is content to murder people. It's confusing, he said, but I think to understand it, the thing you have to consider, the question is, what would be the ideal? This is Bert Weinstein talking to Tucker Carlson. He says, I think to understand this, you have to consider the question of what would be the ideal from the perspective of the pharmaceutical industry. In other words, what is the ideal situation that the pharmaceutical industry has? Well, I don't know. You might have a president who comes in and pretends that he's a skeptic about vaccines because his son was damaged by them. He could come in and then he could reverse and he could put a big pharmaceutical executive in charge of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar. And then that same president, about a year before all this stuff breaks, could say about the MMR vaccine, now you got to get the shot. we're not going to give you any exception on measles, as it was being ramped up, the MMR shot in California and places in the Northeast, mandating it for going to school. So he could prepare people that way. And then he could have a little guy that he puts on the podium, Fauci, a pharmaceutical whore for 35 years. And Trump could pretend that he was somewhat skeptical about that while letting him do everything. Then he could give them tens of billions of dollars. He could create 9 multi-billionaires overnight in these pharmaceutical companies. And then he could use the military to deliver their product and actually put it in arms. He could make sure these pharmaceutical executives are pushing their product out worldwide. That seems to me like that would be kind of ideal. But then he points out the other thing that would be ideal for them would be if the vaccines were recommended for all people, irrespective of their age, irrespective of whether they'd already had COVID-19, irrespective of whether or not they were pregnant. And I would add to that, irrespective of whether they were tested. Trump was the best thing that ever happened to the pharmaceutical industry, the worst thing that ever happened to the rule of law, individual liberty, and informed consent in this country. And he partnered, just like Biden, partnered with YouTube and Google and the big pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical prostitutes, one and all. You know, the pharmaceutical companies used prostitutes to get doctors to prescribe opioids. They threw wild parties. They bribed them with money. You think they didn't do the same thing with Trump, with Biden? You don't think they're buying their way in? He says, if there were safe and effective alternatives, the emergency use authorizations that allow the administration of these vaccines would just evaporate. See, the vaccines are still experimental emergency authorization. And if you know that there are cheap, not necessarily over-the-counter, but drugs that have decades worth of understanding about their safety profile, and they're very affordable because they're no longer patented, if that were to happen, that would be a big pin burst of their big bubble, their big profit bubble. Weinstein said the evidence is strong that ivermectin works as both a prophylactic and a treatment if given early, prevents and treats. He argued that even if the skeptics are right and the data is inconclusive, because ivermectin is a safe drug, you would still administer it to people who showed up with COVID-19 rather than sending them home until they're so sick that they need to be rescued at a hospital. Unless the hospital wanted to make a lot of money because they got incentivized by the Trump administration, still kept in place by the Biden administration. Oh, you got a COVID patient? Here's $13,000. You put them on a ventilator? Here's another $39,000. All the treatments that you give to them, 25% bonus. Worldwide, more than 50 peer-reviewed studies have shown the effectiveness of ivermectin as a treatment and as a preventative against COVID-19. A recent study by the American Journal of Therapeutics that analyzed 18 randomized controlled treatment trials found ivermectin elicited large, statistically significant reductions in mortality, time to clinical recovery, and time to viral clearance in COVID patients. So now we've got the Delta variant. That's how they keep this ball rolling. Right? And it's new restrictions worldwide, says MSN and Bloomberg publications. But actually, it's nothing more than just fear-mongering. As we pointed out, it has symptoms that are exactly the same as a cold or hay fever. People are saying, well, how do you know? I mean, it looks exactly like hay fever. You could have COVID. Well, you're not going to die if it's like hay fever, right? It's just that simple. This is not like Rocky Mountain spotted tick fever, where it looks like flu, and then all of a sudden, boom, it shoots up exponentially and you're dead. No. This is just like hay fever. And as many people have said, if you think this is following the path that most people expect would happen, as you have the community start to get herd immunity just because they've been exposed to it and have survived it, you would typically see a virulent virus first take out the people who were sick, who have a lot of comorbidities or other health issues, the low-hanging fruit. But then people who have a normal immune system, they're going to weather this. They're going to get immunity to it. And then you will get variants that are less intense. That's the way this always happens. As one individual points out, he says, this is nothing other than panic porn dressed up as science. That's Daniel Horowitz who said that. He said, the existing data suggests that the so-called Delta variant isn't any deadlier or more infectious than any other strains. He said, the warnings from epidemiologists and public health bureaucrats like Fauci is nothing other than panic porn dressed up as science. But Fauci's not the only one saying this. We got Timothy Callahan at Texas A&M University. And let me tell you, Texas A&M is deeply inserted into the deep state in a lot of different ways, but it's also into their biological programs. But this Texas A&M academic says, we're going to have counties where the vaccination is rare, where we're nowhere close to herd immunity, and others where it's high. We could be headed toward a divided country of haves and have-nots. Same thing. Same thing Fauci is saying. As we look at this, I think there's one interesting observation that was made by Horowitz. He said, look at the way that they said they don't want to shame any particular region, right? So instead of calling a variant that they identify, whether it's real or not, in Britain, instead of calling it the British variant or the South African variant or the Brazilian or the Indian variant, they're going to call them Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, because it sounds like a hierarchy of progression. Oh, yeah, you know, we had the alpha, but now we got the beta, so it may be worse, right? Rather than just a region, or rather than just a variation. And it's always got to be increasing. But it is nothing more than hay fever or the flu. Still, you have Democrats who are using this to extend lockdowns. At the same time, they are starting to revive their destination fundraisers. They wouldn't go anywhere to raise money in person during the so-called pandemic. But now they're planning it. You've got multiple Democrats talking about doing this, as Zero Hedge points out. You have Kyrsten Sinema will have a weekend in Sonoma, California. You have Senator Jack Reed has invited donors up to Newport for a separate fundraiser. You have Maryland Representative Dutch Ruppersberger is going to have a late August beach weekend in Ocean City. He said people can bring their families. It's very nice, and it's only 3 hours away, and you don't have to travel to California or anything like that. You don't have to, you know, get on the airplanes. Democrats from the conservative Blue Dog Caucus will hold an event at the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia in next week, in July. So with all this happening, what's going on? Most of these fundraisers cost between $2,500 and $5,000 per person. Lobbyists, right? And in their opinion, this is happening because Democrats need to catch up with the GOP. They've been active on fundraising during the pandemic. And, you know, of course, they didn't have their convention. They didn't have their big rallies. They went with the lockdown mail-in election. Nevertheless, they have been quietly getting together and raising money. So Democrats have to keep up with that. I have to say, besides the $2,500 to $5,000 entry fee, do you also have to wear a mask and be vaccinated to go to these Democrat fundraisers? I bet you don't. I bet you don't. You got Pritzker in Illinois. I guess we should call him Governor Pricker. He is urging even the vaccinated people now to mask up. Why? Because we've got the Delta coming in L.A. County. They're trying to revive this whole thing again. Right there where, you know, you got the MacArthur's Church, 7,000 to 8,000 people a week meeting. No masks, no social distancing, singing. No, they got to ramp this thing up again. So they're saying, hey, you got to wear masks indoors for the Delta variant, even if you're vaccinated. Same thing Illinois is saying. These Democrats are pushing this. But in Southern California, Santa Ana, some of these places, San Francisco Gate is wringing its hand and saying online activism is spilling into the streets of Southern California, sparking a post-Trump movement. Now, I talked about this briefly. I saw a comment from one individual on BitChute saying, I really, you know, every time I listen to David Knight, I regret it because he always criticizes Trump. That's right. And you're going to continue to hear me criticize him until he has disappeared. As long as he is an option, I will be criticizing him because of what he did last year and what he would do again and how he pacified people. And this is a good example. She said, what made you think that the people who showed up, the 20,000 people who showed up to cheer Trump, what makes you think that they agree with this vaccine? Well, I would say what makes me think they agree with the vaccine is that they're cheering the guy who put it in place, who brags about it at every rally. Do they have a problem with that? Yeah, they're not going to take the vaccine, but they're going to allow their neighbor to get killed? Is that okay? They are not going to take the vaccine, but they're fine with the fact that he made nine guys multi-billionaires in the pharmaceutical companies. They're okay with that kind of crony capitalism from Republicans? You okay with that? You got any principles whatsoever? Or are you just cheering this guy because you love him? That's what's so pathetic. The idolatry and what he can get away with because of your MAGA idolatry. So they're saying that these people are not following Trump anymore. They're actually focused on trying to do things to take back their lives, to protect their rights and their freedoms. Isn't that interesting? That's what I was saying all last year. I said, forget Trump. He's not doing anything. Do it for yourself. He's not going to do anything for you. He thinks you're nothing. Yeah, he compared the people who showed up on January the 6th to the crowd at Let's Make a Deal. He was laughing at you on January the 6th. He doesn't respect you one way or the other. He doesn't respect you. He doesn't respect the Constitution. He doesn't respect anyone. He demands respect from everybody. He demands loyalty from everybody, but he respects no one. A year from now, I don't want to be back on this board demanding that they repeal a requirement to donate a kidney. Right? What's next? Are you going to be sterilized for the common good? Is that what we're going to have? California was emerging from the pandemic, but for these activists, the battle, both online and off, was far from over. Good for them. My body, my choice, were the signs. No vaccine. They said 6 months later, a right-wing movement is reconstituting itself across the United States, fueled by social media, without Trump. That's the key thing. Don't do this for Trump. Do it for your liberty. Do it for the principles of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They said, you've got a big network that's being fueled by outrage and misinformation. It's not misinformation. Real information. They said, you have armed groups and Trump supporters and anti-vaccine moms and government skeptics and conspiracy theorists. Now you have people across the political spectrum, left and right, who are now united because they don't want to see this happening. As Reuters reports in Abu Dhabi, they will only allow vaccinated people in public spaces beginning August the 20th. You want that to happen here? It's real easy for that to happen here. All you have to do is nothing. All you have to do is just keep following Trump. Shut all this other stuff off and say the only thing that matters is those Dominion voting machines. We've got to get Trump in by August. Hang on, we'll be right back after we have a little bit of vaccine cheering from Stephen Colbert. As a matter of fact, before we talk a little bit about heart attacks, it just made me think about the church committee hearings where they had the heart attack gun. Now, it didn't kill nearly as many people as what we have done now, but I want to play a little bit of that. Remember the hearings on the CIA and its assassination device, the heart attack gun?
Various devices for administering the toxin that were found in the laboratory. In fact, there were dart guns. You mentioned suicides. Well, I don't think a suicide is usually accomplished with a dart, particularly a gun that can place the dart in a human target in such a way that he doesn't even know that he's been hit.
There's no question about it. It was also for offensive reasons.
Does this pistol fire the dart?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chairman. The round thing at the top is obviously the sight. The rest of it is what is practically a normal 45, although it's special. However, it works by electricity. There's a battery in the handle, and it fires a small dart.
And the dart itself, when it strikes the target, Does the target know that he's been hit and about to die?
That depends, Mr. Chairman, on the particular dart used. There are different kinds of these flechettes that were used in various weapon systems, and a special one was developed which potentially would be able to enter the target without perception.
But also the toxin itself would not appear in the autopsy?
Well, there was an attempt.
Or the dart?
Yes. So that there was no way of perceiving that the target was hit.
As a murder instrument, that's about as efficient as you can get, isn't it?
No. They've come up with a much more efficient murder instrument to kill a lot of people, haven't they? And, of course, there's no indication that you've been hit, that you've been injected with something that's toxic, if they can keep people from hearing about it. You know, we look at this and the heart attack gun, or the heart attack injection, the genetic code injection. As I pointed out yesterday, Reuters reported on what was happening with the military, but they also reported that when they went back with their special scientific advisory committee, remember the FDA said, well, it looks like we've got an issue here with heart attack and with myocarditis with males, especially young, healthy males who... We can't blame it on anything else. And, of course, it's not limited just to them. They're pretending that it's limited just to them because for everybody else, they gaslight you. They lie to you like the CIA. And they tell you, no, these people already had heart issues. But they can't say that with these young, healthy athletes who are getting heart attacks. So they said, well, it's an emergency, so let's do something about it next week. And then the week comes and they say, well, you know, we got Juneteenth now. We got a new holiday. Let's do it next week. When they got around to actually looking at the emergency, as you know, because they really do care about you, right? They really care. They really care about teens getting heart attacks from their vaccines. When they finally got around to it, they said, well, it looks like it's 12.6 per million. And as I said, you look at Ohio, where you have five people can win $1 million each. So, you know, five people can win $1 million. But they have 5.5 million people who've been vaccinated there, enrolled in the Vax-a-Million contest. So you got less than 1 in a million chance of getting that $1 million, but they talk about that incessantly. They don't want to talk about the heart attack issue, even though 12.6 of these are happening per million. So you've got about a 13 times higher chance of getting a heart attack from their injections than you do from winning $1 million. And that's just one of the serious side effects. But we don't want to talk about that. This story was sent to me from a listener. This is a local story from here in Columbus, Ohio, detailing something I've not heard about so far, vaccinations as part of probation. Well, that's really kind of where we are right now, right? But this is a microcosm of that. This is a judge in Franklin County, which is associated with the town that is in. I don't see it here, but it was reported by the ABC affiliate as well as the Fox station. And this is in Columbus. That's where it is, in Columbus, Ohio. A county judge there has ordered vaccines, the COVID-19 vaccines, as terms of probation. And people are saying this is kind of crazy. But, you know, hey, it works for the pharmaceutical companies, no problem. Coronavirus vaccines may be the worst mistake we have ever made, writes LifeSite News. They say the introduction, the promotion, and the safety assured by our governments that they're entirely safe and increasingly obligatory, like this judge is doing it here. The delivery mechanism, writes a German scientist, means that the vaccines send the DNA gene sequences of the spike protein into the cell nucleus rather than the cytosol fluid found inside the cell where the virus normally would produce proteins. We've also had other scientists point out in an experiment. It was a Thomas Jefferson University where you had a small private university. They did an experiment. They said, oh, by the way, the conventional wisdom is that the mRNA cannot modify DNA. It can only copy it, but it can't modify it. They said, well, you know, we found out that actually it does. It does. Do you think that Fauci and Francis Collins didn't know that? Yeah. As they point out, they're not properly speaking vaccines, right? But they're genomic substances injected into the body's DNA. That's one of the things that's always concerned me when you stop and think about it. And I've used this argument before about fluoride in the water. I said, we know from studies that have been done by Harvard and others, we know that fluoride, if it is in a high enough concentration, causes a significant loss of IQ points in children, has other deleterious health effects. So dosage is important. Dosage is always important for any medicine, even if you've got something that is completely safe and prescribed on a regular basis to people. You take something like aspirin. When I was probably about 2 or 3 years old, I was interested in, I had just seen Jekyll and Hyde. I thought that was really cool. And my mom had given me aspirins, and I could feel them dissolving because they didn't have them coated like they do now. So I thought, what would happen? And so I got a bunch of things together, climbed up on the counter, and emptied a bottle of aspirin, and thinking I was going to transform into something. I got it transformed into being, I had to have my stomach pumped out. So you can take something, the difference between a toxin and an innocuous medicine is the dosage, right? It becomes a poison if you take too much of it. And it was vividly etched into my memory when I got my stomach pumped out. But but that's true of fluoride. How do you control the dosage if you put it into the water supply, right? How do you keep some people from getting too little of it, assuming that it is, assuming that it is, there you go. That was very influential on me as a kid. I'm lucky that I didn't try to fly off the roof. But anyway, how do you measure the dosage of fluoride in the water supply if you just dump it in there? It's going to be pretty hard to get even distribution, first of all. But even if you did have even distribution, are you going to have the dosage for an adult male or for a one-year-old? Is it going to be the same dosage? And yet you have the same dosage for these vaccines, don't you? Now, if you're injecting somebody with a dead bacteria, I guess the dosage wouldn't really matter with a traditional vaccine. But if you're injecting genetic material, don't you think that it would make a difference if you're injecting the same amount into a child as you are into an adult? If you're injecting the same amount, you know, think about the NFL player who put these things together. Both he and his wife got the injection at the same time. She wound up with serious, persistent, life-altering problem. She now has MS, multiple sclerosis. Perhaps he didn't get it because he's 6'6 and about 300 pounds. Now, she's not that big. But they both get the same dosage. How does that work? Anyway, these dangerous new exotic creatures, as Dr. Tal Zaks, a chief medical officer at Moderna, said, quote, we are actually hijacking the software of life. Now, I tell you that. Twitter doesn't like that. YouTube doesn't like that. The technocrats don't like that. But that's what Moderna said. So there's four problems, as laid out by this LifeSite News article. One problem is these lab-made monoclonal antibodies usually only last for a few months, requiring people to get multiple infusions or injections. The second problem is vaccine-induced seropositivity. In other words, because they're injecting you with this viral debris, and then they're testing you for the viral debris, and they're magnifying that viral debris by a factor of a trillion, you can test positive for it. Because it's not just what they inject, but they make your body start to manufacture this. Third problem is researchers don't know if the COVID-19 vaccines will lead to antibodies that can protect you from infection at all. Finally, serious adverse effects caused by the vaccine will likely be attributed to the virus itself. And we've already seen this. We've already seen this from the very beginning. When you look at what is happening in the UK alone, they have produced a report. The ratio of adverse reactions has grown to be one in every 152 people from the UK's own government report. Here's what is happening in the UK. Many people have gone blind. They have suffered impaired vision, other eye disorders. And that is about 3,000 people for Pfizer, about 10,000 for the AstraZeneca. They've had nervous system disorders. That's brain damage, facial paralysis, strokes, capillary leak syndrome. That is over 171,000 people in the UK alone. Cardiac issues. a figure approaching 9,000. Blood disorders in the vicinity of 11,000. Gastrointestinal disorders stand at 82,000. The total number of deaths is 1,180 in the UK alone. They're conducting their survey. We have our CDC VAERS system in the U.S. The EU has another one, and all of them are off the charts. We now have more people that have been harmed in these 6 months from these vaccines, not quite 6 months, than in the last 30 years combined from every other vaccine combined. These are actually government-authorized figures out of the UK. Mother of a COVID vaccine-injured teen tells RFK Jr. she was gaslighted by the doctors. She said that it wasn't until after some of these things started going public that she realized that her 19-year-old son was at risk for heart inflammation. He had already had heart inflammation from getting COVID earlier, and the doctors didn't say anything about that. She took him in for the experimental vaccine. At the front edge of the experimental vaccine, she told RFK Jr. she feels like she's been ignored and gaslighted for doctors for believing that her son's heart condition was caused by the Pfizer vaccine. She said his reaction to the vaccine was so severe he went to the emergency room about 10 times. He's so sick that he is afraid he's not going to survive. And we have a lot of people, of course, who have not. And I'm not going to go into these cases today, but just to give you an idea, I mean, one of the pictures off of Vaccine Impact, a young husband and father, I mean, this guy is in great shape. He's young. He's got six-pack abs, and yet now he's got a heart condition, and he's going to have that heart condition for the rest of his life, along with an 18-year-old. And then a 68-year-old woman, a curling coach, a male, both of them died from this. Finally, with the vaccines, I'll just say this. The Freethought Project points out that a government representative in the UK says, well, we're going to need to start vaccinating pets with this stuff once the human population has been dealt with. COVID possibly started in bats. Now, anybody who's still pushing that absurd narrative at this point, you need to immediately write them off. But here's his logic. He's still saying, well, it possibly started in bats. And so the priority is to vaccinate humans. But a year or so down the road, we've got to look at animal vaccines. This is Sir Mark Hendrick, reported by The Mirror in the UK. And as the Freethought Project points out, well, you know, we've had a positive COVID-19 test on fruit in Tanzania, right? Remember that? Remember where the president of Tanzania said, oh, yeah? I think I know what this is about. I think this is about big pharmaceutical companies coming in and wanting to shoot people up with vaccines. And we've seen what happens when you come into the villages and shoot people up with vaccines. I don't think so. And so he took he gave a piece of fruit, the PCR test, and it tested positive. And so, as they point out on Freethought Project, so what are we going to do now? Are we going to start vaccinating fruit? Well, why not? Why not, of course. Let me just say, as we look at what is happening with Biden's wars, I did not address this yesterday or the day before, and as he stepped up the bombing in Syria and Iraq, and he said this was in self-defense, the only good thing that can come out of this is perhaps people will wake up, as even the Democrats in Congress are saying, maybe we don't need to have this kind of authority with the president, right? For the second time, writes Glenn Greenwald, for the second time in the 5 months since he was inaugurated, Biden on Sunday ordered a U.S. bombing raid on Syria, and for the first time, he also bombed Iraq. The rationale offered was, quote, they conducted defensive precision airstrikes against facilities used by Iran-backed militia groups in the Iraq-Syria border region. And the spokesperson added, the United States acted pursuant to its right of self-defense. What does the right of self-defense mean? It doesn't even mean preemptive strikes. Do you remember the Day of Infamy, December 7th? when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor? That was infamy, wasn't it? Forget about the fact that FDR invited that attack and enticed them to do that. It was still, the fact that they did that was reprehensible. Why was it reprehensible to people in America at the time? Because they understood the principles, the Christian principles, that had been laid out by Augustine for what a justified war is. And that means that you do not attack somebody until they attack you. It doesn't matter if they're a threat. Until they attack you, because the threat is very subjective, it's like hate speech or something like that, until they attack you, you're not justified in attacking them first, preemptively. And then when you do attack, you have to make sure that you are going to try to minimize civilian casualties. That's why we wear uniforms in Western civilization, because it's based on those Christian principles. And the purpose is to neutralize the threat, not to bomb them into extinction, not to pursue a policy of genocide. It's just to neutralize the threat. And once you do that, the war needs to end. That's the definition of when you end the war. Because of our Christian principles in Western civilization, that's why the founders of this country put in the Constitution the idea that we have to have a debate and a vote by our elected representatives before we do a war. And then after that, it is turned over to the president to be the one to run this, because you don't want to run a war by committee. But you have to have a debate and a declaration to see whether it is warranted or not. But that's not what is happening anymore. And as they talk about this, they continue to use demonize the people by saying it's the Iran-backed militias. Why do they continue to use that word? That is psychological preparation for what these guys want to do here in America. They want to have an asymmetric war here in America. They want to do to America what they have done to Afghanistan, what they have done to Iraq, and to other places. And so as they look at this, one individual says, we need to have something that is short of whatever the president wants to do. And we need to look at the authorization for the use of military force. And we need to start making comparisons, in my opinion, to what the Japanese did at Pearl Harbor, to what the Germans did to Poland and other places. You do not initiate a war, and yet that's what we have done since World War II. We have been the initiators. We have attacked people who you cannot make a credible statement that Iraq and Syria, Iran, present a credible threat to us. So Iraq condemned this as a flagrant violation of Iraqi sovereignty. And they have now replied after that with an attack on U.S. troops in Syria. But federal authorities are now using the idea that disinformation, anybody criticizing the U.S. government's policy, is a pretext to silence foreign policy dissent. And I pointed out last week how they had taken down entire websites accusing them of disinformation. So if they say that they disagree with the information that you have out there, they now presume that they can act to take down your entire website. This is a very, very dangerous precedent. Hopefully it is obvious to you, but we're seeing this happening, as I pointed out before, in Canada and elsewhere. This is the new war, the war on free speech. Because we've had the war on drugs, we've had the war on poverty, and it turns out that if you look at what happened with the war on drugs, it actually is the war of drugs. If you look at the story from Mint Press News, and again, I imagine that they will also be taken down because they criticize the U.S. government. It's on Zero Hedge. Politics, Profit, and Poppies. How the CIA turned Afghanistan into a failed narco state. The point is that the country has now been, year after year, a record crop. They now produce more than 90% of all the world's opium, illicit, they say, from which heroin and opioids are made. I would not be surprised if some of that found its way into our pharmaceutical companies as part of the opioid epidemic. It's kind of coincidental, isn't it, that as we started ramping up this production in Afghanistan, that we suddenly had an opioid epidemic? Kind of the same way that as the CIA got involved in creating crack cocaine and putting it into the black communities there in California, exposed by Gary Webb, that we started to have a crack cocaine epidemic. And it was the CIA and its Operation Cyclone that began funding the Afghan Mujahideen militias in order to turn Afghanistan into a Vietnam for the Soviet Union. And now Afghanistan is about to turn into a Vietnam for us. We're going to have our Saigon moment as well. But as they did that, and they started selling them vast amounts of weapons, they wanted to get their money back on the other end. And so they set them up, and we've shown the pictures, and you've had reports that were done by Geraldo Rivero showing the U.S. troops guarding the poppy fields for them. They justified it by saying that they needed to have some continuity and a way to keep their economy going. Well, it's now become a narco state. They have, here's the statistics, more than half of their economy is based around opium in Afghanistan. At its peak in Colombia, at its peak in terms of cocaine, in Colombia, known for its cocaine, it was only 3% of their gross domestic product. And so Afghanistan has become the most prevalent of all the narco states, even after the Soviet Union left as the Taliban, and this is not, I'm not a friend of the Taliban, but the Taliban did not like the opium being grown there and the people associated with that. So they cracked down on it, and it dropped to supplying 10% of the world's population. Then after September 11th, after we invaded Afghanistan again, it rapidly rose up to where now it is 90% of the worldwide supply, 50% of their economy. It is a narco state. And who is it that did this? The CIA, the military-industrial complex. The reason I mentioned this is because if you think these people care anything at all, if they have a conscience, if they have any moral compass whatsoever, they wouldn't be doing this. And if they will do this to those people, don't think that they won't do it to you because you're American or because you're European or because you're Canadian. They don't respect any human life. They're capable of anything, morally capable of anything and everything. They have no restrictions on what they do legally, morally, or technically. The technology these people have is actually pretty amazing. So the bottom line is, I tell you this, do not despair, however. There's no reason to despair about this. And there's no reason to cower in fear. This is something that ought to not make you afraid. It should not make you feel that the future is black if you're a Christian. If you're a Christian, we don't worry about this type of thing. And so, you know, I know a lot of people will say, I don't want to hear nothing but bad news. There's a lot of bad news. We need to be able to face that bad news. But, you know, whenever there's bad news, it's just like when you offend people to tell them where they stand before God without Christ. That is offensive to people, really offensive to them. But you got to give them the bad news before they can appreciate the good news. And so I'm not giving you the good news, but there is good news, and not in this world necessarily. But we do not have to fear this, because I have to say that when I look at the people who, for money, for power, for profit, will kill people in mass quantities by withholding and lying to them about cheap available treatment, or by unleashing these plagues of drugs on people, creating wars, dropping bombs, when I look at that, you have to understand that these people, as offensive as they are to us, God takes a great deal more offense to them. And that's why we don't worry about this. He will take care of it. That's it for today's broadcast. Join us on KHNC, 1360KHNC.com.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.